Actually, I was about to talk about asymmetric symbolic exclusion type result, but Jeremy insists I should talk about quantum mechanics. So here we are, and I spent the whole day preparing. Of course, I also listened to all the lectures, and so let's see how we go. So then let me start with just review the classical result of Rendon Schrodinger equation. So you take n as a model. Is there a pointer here? Oh, anybody has a pointer here? Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. So take a Rendon Schrodinger equations, which is let's put the I here, and otherwise everything is the same as these parabolic models, and the randomness, you write as Vx of omega, and you put the coupling constant lambda here. And this Laplace operator is just discrete Laplace operator. And so of course, I mean, you can take a Fourier transform, and then this becomes multiplication by dispersion law E of P. And E of P goes like P squared. And for all practical purposes in this talk, you should just think about this E of P just P squared. And the randomness, the random potential, this is one choice of random potential. You have many other choices, but here you choose this V of X. And for each X belong to the ZD, it's IID random variable. And you assume that this is a normalization equal to 0, and this is a normalization, the variance equal to 1. And there are some conditions on higher moment, but we won't talk too much about that. Okay, so one thing quite important in this model is if you want to make this model is difficult, only in the case of this Vx has no time dependent. If the Vx is a Markov process, then the problem actually is much, much easier. Okay, so now there are other related problems like you can do this quantum Lorentz gas, or you can sort of this wave propagation in random media, and various this type of problems are related. But so now let me give some short review of a few problems of Schrodinger equations. I hope you don't mind if you know this subject very well. This is just a fairly standard. If you take a free Schrodinger equation, so this means you take out this piece, and then once you put an I, then it's very, very different from the motion, because once you put the I, if you calculate the mean square displacement, when you take expectation in the quantum mechanics, it always means that you take a wave function and then you square it. So it's important everything a wave function to be squared. And then you calculate mean square displacement at time t, it actually go like t squared. And this is completely different from the Brownian motions. And then you also find that I think this part is not important. So Schrodinger equation actually behaves very different from the heat equation. This is the first message. And the known result about the dynamics of this following, it's I think this everybody knows. In dimension one is localized, and in higher dimension with this lambda large, and it's also localized. So this means the dynamics has no evolution basically. And then, so the key idea is because, especially when this Laplace orbit is discrete, and if you think about it, lambda is really large, and you think about it, I mean, so unless this V, this potential V is close to zero, otherwise this Laplace orbit is a small perturbation of the V. So if you perturb the Laplace operator with respect to the V, then you basically get it. And, but of course, there are some more serious problems, small divisors. When the V close to zero. Now, some major problem is, of course, you want to say in dimension two everything is not localized, and I don't think anybody has any clue why this is correct. In dimension three, and for coupling constant lambda is small, and I want to show that they are extended states, but here I put a norm, but actually there's nothing here. And then if you want to be more ambitious, you can ask this quantum Brownian motion problem. You want to say that the position of the wave function, the position is now take wave function squared. You take a derivative, it becomes the plus operator acting on psi squared. This is, I mean, of course, strictly speaking, this is not going to be correct, but this is just what I put a quotation mark because you are hoping that you can make this correct. And then of course, if this is correct, then this will go back to our familiar Brownian motion's behavior. The mean square displacement go like a T. And then there are also, this is even more ambitious, but I think probably you'll like this very much. The eigenvalue distribution has to be given by the GUE ensembles. No, I forgot to write this lambda is small. Okay, so this is only a case lambda is small. Actually, this is not going to be completely correct because even if lambda is small, there's localization on the edge. So it's not going to be completely correct. So our main result says the following. So if you take the time t is less than lambda 3 minus 2 minus kappa, and lambda is the coupling constant, then this quantum Brownian motion actually is correct. And this kappa, I will tell you this, how big is kappa. Kappa is quite small, but anyway, it's positive. So now I want to say what's the number of collisions you have is actually go to infinity. Because you want to show something in Brownian motion, so you need infinite collisions. Okay, now for quantum mechanics, the first thing you have to define something is what's the phase space densities. And the phase space density is defined by the so-called Wigner distribution. Now, you think about it, now, whenever you open a probability book, they will always draw you a Brownian motion. I know I don't need any of you. This is fine. When you see the Brownian motions, they always see something like that. It's called Brownian motion. In quantum mechanics textbook, whenever you open it, you always see something like that. So this is typical wave package of the wave functions. And then this is the oscillation. And this oscillation is determine the velocity or the momentum of the particles. And then the amplitude, I mean the amplitude is determine the probability to find the particle at position x. So that we're going to ask the question, let's suppose I give a wave function, can I reconstruct the classical phase space density? So he came up with this idea called the Wigner distribution. And he says, if you take at a point x, then if you make a shift, you shift this the position variable. But you take a wave function, so you take a complex conjugate, you make a shift. And you take a psi, you also make a shift, but it shifts in a different directions. And then you take the Fourier transform. Because you make this shift, so you should capture these oscillations. So that's what's his idea. And then this object is called the Wigner distribution. And then this Wigner distribution has very nice properties. If you integrate out the velocity, it becomes the positions. This is probability to find the particle in the x. If you integrate out the position, it becomes the probability to find the particle at the v, with velocity v. And this is the Fourier transform. Okay, so this is very nice, except that this function actually is never positive, really. Except this function is positive if and only if this size is Gaussian. So this is a big problem that typically the Wigner distribution is not positive. So now, the first question, I mean, we started this problem many years ago, and it's almost 9 years ago. And it starts with, you ask the first question. Now, suppose you look at this quantum mechanical problem. Now, when is the first time you see an effective collision? So how long do you have to wait to see an effective, the quantum particle will see effective one collision? And the answer is that the time has to be equal to lambda minus 2. So in the time, so now let me go back to the here. So this is a Schrodinger equation, there's a lambda here. Now if the strength of the potential is lambda, then classically you see there's an effective one collision. You want to think about it, the time will be lambda minus 1, if there's effective one collision. But quantum mechanical is very, it's actually they push the time up to lambda minus two. And the reason of this is because the quantum mechanical cross section, it's actually the proportional to the v squared. If you proportion to v squared, you will become lambda squared. So then the first effective time will be lambda minus two. So you take epsilon equal to lambda squared, and you take epsilon minus one, and then you rescale this object. I mean, I suggest that you don't look at this line. Okay. Maybe I should not even write it. Because you take this Wigner distribution, and you rescale it. Rescale it so that the effective time is epsilon minus one. This means lambda minus two. And then you are going to get an effective collision. And then the answer is that if you take a Wigner distribution, and if you take its expectation, and the expectation is going to converge to a density weakly, and this density will solve the linear Boltzmann equation. The linear Boltzmann equation means that this is transport term, and then there's a scattering, means that if you come in with velocity u and go out with velocity v, and this is given by a probability called the scattering cross section, sigma uv. And in our case, sigma uv is just the u squared equal to v squared. It just says the energy has to conserve. So this was, this looks completely, if you ask anybody, says quantum mechanics has to behave like this, they would think about it, say this is completely trivial. And but it takes a long time to prove, actually. It started with Herbert Spohn in the, actually it's not, in the late 70s, and he did it for a short time, and then we did this also for a much longer time, global in time, and then also in the case of Gaussian, and then there are some postdoc at Chen, he did this case for the discrete model we are talking about. Okay, so. Dimension, good. The dimension here is 302. So to prove the Boltzmann equation, you can be in three dimension or two dimension, but not in one dimension. Actually, there was a story because somebody proved the same result in dimension one. And we checked it, actually, the equation in dimension one is not even the Boltzmann equation. So, but, okay. So, and I mean, I'm talking about stories, so there's another story. Another story is after Spohn says that he proved this for a short time, there was an announcement they can prove global in time, but this turned out to be wrong also. So, so now, the reason there's a difficulty in doing this is because quantum mechanics, you have a wave function, it's not really a particle. So whenever, even if you start with very localized like Gaussian bump, whenever you bump into an obstacle, it will become a spherical wave. So one, just like you drop a stone in the water, it becomes spherical wave. So it will become spherical wave. And now because once you hit this, it becomes spherical wave, and then how can something like this behave like a particle? And the reason is because if you have a lot of these collisions, and they will have interference, and this interference has to produce you the particle behavior. And it's very, it's my own work, so, but anyway, it's very non-trivial. But we always think about electrons as a particle, so then you don't feel like Boltzmann equation is significant. But actually, if you think about it, a water wave and the interference pattern will produce a particle behavior, it's highly non-trivial. So now, and then our result, the new result says, if you look at a longer time, then the longer time, you will still, the Wigner distribution of the expectation still converge. And then, by the way, all the convergences are weak convergences. And then you will satisfy a heat equation. So this exactly is the heat equation. So now here I put this E of V equal to E, this means I restrict it in the energy surface. That's because everything will have if your initial data has a fixed energy, it will always stay the same energy. So it's only interesting to fix in energy surface. So then this it solved the heat equation, and this is in a sense our explanation that the Schrodinger equation will become the Gibbs equation. And now this was there was a problem that because we take expectation, and then you may ask that maybe can you prove this in some stronger sense? And then in the case of this previous Boltzmann equation case, in this case, this Boltzmann equation case. I mean, we didn't do this for this scaling. In the case of Boltzmann equation, I mean, this remark should be in the previous transparency. So it says that actually you can replace these convergence by convergence in probability. And so this means actually if you take Wigner distribution, if you take some test functions, its variance is going to be zero. On the other hand, if you don't put the test function, you just calculate the variance, it's always bigger than one. So this is something quite serious. I should put a name here. This is a result by Chen. I mean, this one, this is a result by Chen. Yes. Yes, I rescale space and time. Because once you make a time longer, because previously you get a Boltzmann equation. So Boltzmann equation, you have a fixed scaling. So suppose after some scaling, you get a Boltzmann equation. Now from Boltzmann equation, you want to get a Brownian motion, a heat equation. Then the space and time has to scale in certain way. And then if you did this scaling correctly, then it's going to satisfy the heat equation. I didn't put the scaling because otherwise it's going to be has a lot of epsilon. Okay, so this was our basic result. And then he says that this quantum Brownian motion, I mean somebody called it this way, I don't know what's a good name. This is not produced by a semi-classical picture. It's not because your object becomes semi-classical like a particle. It's really by a collective wave interference from these scatters. And then you should not think about the wave function. You hit the obstacle because what really happened is the wave function will simultaneously hit many, many obstacles. And it's their interference pattern give you these diffusions. Okay, so now here is the picture because I think sometimes picture tells a lot more. So then this is the if you want to show this is what the Brownian motion looks like, and then if you look at in a smaller cube, then it behaves like a Boltzmann equation, and then if you look at this even smaller one, if you look at what's happening near an obstacle, it's actually a quantum mechanical wave comes in and it comes out. And this is actually a spherical wave. But then if you look at very, very large scale, it becomes just like the Brownian motions. And this was our result. And this is a joint work with Erdős and Samhoff. So let me tell you a few words about proof. I'm not going to prove this because it's a very long story. And I just indicate a few things. The first thing is that the most serious problem here is the memory effect. What do you mean by memory? The memory is if you have waves and you send it out, and then there's an obstacle, you hit an obstacle, and then you keep on going. But on the other hand, you remember you hit this obstacle. That's a problem. So then how do you control this memory? And this is really, I think among all the trouble, this is the most serious one. And this memory effect is expected to be small for even for a long time in dimension 3. But on the other hand, you don't expect this to be small for dimension 2. And the reason a superficial reason is very easy to give. You can say that because you want to prove it becomes a Brownian motion. And the Brownian motion in dimension 2 is recurrent, so of course the memory cannot be small. And in dimension 3, it will not come back, so you say it's small. But on the other hand, it's very difficult to prove because the reason is because the Brownian motion picture produced because this oscillation, and I just don't know how to you cannot take absolute values of the object, which you typically just infinity. And then the main idea of the proof is we use the reorganization method, and we classify all the Feynman diagrams, and you also need some stopping rule, because if you don't stop your expansion, then the full expansion of the of this problem is actually not renormalized. Oh yeah, it's something like that. Suppose where I expand, and if whenever I find some troubles which I don't like, I try to stop, and then. Yes. Let me show you the Feynman diagram, and then I can tell you what do you mean by we stop. Okay. So then you, when you write down, now this is evolution operator. In evolution operator, you just write down this Dyson series or Dillhart form. And this V is your random potential. Now the random potential consists of summation of a randomness at every size ZD. So then you can think about, you keep on doing this expansion, and then you write your wave function psi t, just summation over a, and this, and the psi of a. The psi of a is this is obstacle alpha 1, alpha 2, and alpha a. So this means you expand, and you first hit particle 1, then hit particle 2, and alpha 2, and so on. But in any case, the problem is now, in this expansion, there's always last term e to the minus I t minus s of h. This is still full evolution. And now when I say stopping rule is, for example, I will stop whenever I find this alpha 4 equal to alpha 1, then I find a recollision, then I stop. But when I stop means I don't keep on expanding this further, then I look at this expression and try to use this operator is a unitary operator, and I try to get some better estimate. I don't keep on doing expansion forever. That's what I mean by stop. And then this rule, there are quite a few cases, so I can't really tell you how many cases we are considering, but that's basically what I mean by stopping rule. And now when I expand these objects, this is the psi, and then this A label is obstacle. And now, if you want to compute the Wigner distribution, it's basically like computing the L2 norm. So computing the L2 norm, so you write a line as a psi, and there's a line, which is a psi bar. And you take expectation. Now you find that because we assume that this is mean zero, so roughly speaking, it's to pair up. I mean, this is okay. First of all, this is not completely correct because a random variable has mean zero, it does not mean I can only do pair up. I can have this pair this, but then this is also the same as this. This is a possibility, but let's assume that all that are not series, and then you only consider the pairing. And so roughly speaking, when you want to compute the L2 norm, the expectation is really summation over all the permutations of this Feynman graph. And this object means when you write down this expression, very very long expression, and then your obstacle, this obstacle and this obstacle has to be the same. This and this are the same, this and this are the same. So this means, and the real analytic expression is quite complicated because you're going to have this on each line here. This each of these lines is really one of these propagate. Yes, then that's where we started. Okay. So that's why everybody start with Gaussian. And then when we start, we feel that the Gaussian is not that important. One can also handle a non-Gaussian case. And in this paper, we do a non-Gaussian case. But for the Gaussian, then you will have this property. But on the other hand, Gaussian will make stopping rule a bit tricky. Because here I say whenever I see a recollision, I stop. But in the Gaussian, it's difficult to say, what do you mean by recollision? I mean, it can be done, but it's trickier. Okay, so then you find that this is called Leder graph, and this is the classical contribution. This means remember this line is away from his side. This line is away from his side bar. So this means that you first start from here, you hit this part obstacle, and then the sidebar will hit the same obstacle, and so on. And this graph means that you hit this obstacle, but on the other hand, your sidebar will going to hit this one first. So it's very strange. It's just like quantum mechanics you say the wave function has evolution. But on the other hand, everything depends on psi square. It's observable taken with respect to psi square. So it means that you have a ghost copy, which is psi bar. And this means that you and your ghost copy, they are doing exactly the same behavior. This means that your ghost copy, which is completely crazy. And then, so what one find out is if you have something like this, it's actually, if you have one cross, then you get lambda squared. If you have two cross, you get lambda 24. So the classical behavior, this means the psi and psi bar are hitting the same obstacle in the same order. This is the main contribution. Otherwise, this is, in a case like this, this contribution will be much smaller. So then this produced the concept of degree of permutation. Is because in general this is quite complicated. It's very complicated. And then you want to say that how complicated is this graph? And this is the how complicated this graph is defined to be a degree. And then what you do is you put your permutation in. You put down your permutation, and then into this graph, and then the ladder will become a linear, moving like this, and something like this is called anti-ladder. You come down like this, and then you count the vertices which are not the ladder vertices, and this is called a degree. And once you have this concept of degree, and the next thing is you prove a theorem says if you calculate a variable Feynman diagram. It's going to be very, very small if the degree is large. And how small it is lambda 22 times the degree. And lambda is the size of coupling constant. And because now I can get lambda, I can get this value proportional to lambda to some power. Now, on the other hand, you calculate how many graphs with a fixed degree. And then this competition, you find that this competition this will go to zero, provided the time is small enough, and that's why the time has to be small enough. And the reason, this is a typical problem if you use the expansion type method, is because if you take a star and psi bar, whenever you calculate expectation, there's n factorial from the pairing. And how to handle this n factorial? Here, the way we handle n factorial is, you find that if your permutation is quite crazy, actually this Feynman graph will be quite small. I mean, this part, you can think about this part, it's a completely, just a calculus problem. It has nothing to do with any fancy subject. It's just because the Feynman diagram is really just an integration. It's just a lot of integrations, and for every permutation, you associate with a very, very large integration, and this integration is so what you want to show is this integration is small, but you want to find a concept on the permutation to say that this integration is small enough. So this is what we did. Okay. So, but this is not this exponent is not the best possible. We think the best possible should be 2, but we can't do it. But on the other hand, even if you can do it up to 2, it's still not going to finish the story because actually, if you want to go beyond lambda minus 4, then you have to resum these four-leg diagrams, and this is going to be quite complicated. So, so this is what we can do about this the derivation of Hill equation from the Schrödinger equations, and the key point is really the Schrödinger equation is time reversible. This means if you go this in time. And at time t, if you go backward, you will go back to where you were. On the other hand, the diffusion doesn't have that properties. And so, how much time I have? What?
Okay, don't worry, I have another topic.
You look very worried, and so you worry that I will finish right now, but I won't let you go. Okay, so here, now,
how far do you expect this to be valid in time?
I think. But it's true. It's true in dimension 3 or higher. I think it's correct. And but I don't. I mean, okay. There are two questions. One is, if you don't take this, because we are studying the time-dependent dynamics. Okay. So there's a time here. If you don't do the time-dependent dynamics, if you don't do the T, you work on Green functions. Then one expects that the expansion of Green functions will give you. You can interpret this as a diffusive behavior, the time goes to infinity, in dimension 3 or higher. That's what one expects. And then what we can do is, I mean, still very extremely limited. But on the other hand, I didn't give the reference of what people did it for the time, because, let me show you. Because what we did was, we consider case time is lambda minus 2 minus kappa. This kappa is bigger than 0. And then this case, there are many, many papers deal with this case. And I think there's one with Tom Wolf and Schrock, and which is, I don't remember. There are quite a lot of. And the reason is because here, in this case, there's no collision. And here, you have infinite many collisions. This number of collisions is infinite. So let's, and because you have infinite collisions, so you have to handle the interference of infinite many particles. On the other hand, what you really want to do, if you want to prove this extended state conjecture, you have to be, even if you can do this for lambda minus 2n, for arbitrary n, it's still not enough. There's nobody says if you can do this for large enough, then you finish the problem. And in fact, I think this is not correct, because if you look at the localization, this is edge of spectrum, and one expects that this part is localized, and this part is extended. On the other hand, there's a point here. This is so-called mobility edge. One expects that the localization length, when you approach the mobility edge, will diverge. So this will be extreme. So you will not be able to, even if you can do this, you still cannot prove the extended states. And so from this point of view, this result is completely trivial. I mean, I wish I proved something more, but okay. All right. So now I want to say something about this the mean field behavior of Schrodinger equation. The reason is because well, these are all problems of quantum dynamics of many particles. And then, the other thing is, for this mean field model, there are a lot of probability works for about this mean field model. I think it's especially work by the Katz and McKean. And now, you ask the same question. The only thing you change is you put the I in your problem. You put the I in your problem. Otherwise, it's the same as, basically the same as what I did. So consider Schrodinger equations, and now here you have n particle. You put n particle in R3, so and particle from 1 to n, you take summation over j, and this is their kinetic energy. And then their interaction energy, you take the so-called mean field case. The mean field case is any two particle. Oh, sorry, this has to be j because any two parties interacting by a pair potential. On the other hand, you make the interaction strength 1 over n to make it much smaller. So this is the so-called the mean field boson case. And the physical examples of this problem is actually a star. If you think about a star and then you put a minus sign in the problem here, and it becomes attractive force, and then this 1 over n is just gravitational constant, because the gravitational constant is quite small. So you can think about gravitational constant is almost like 1 over n. And in fact, it is. I mean, in fact, if you check the size of the star, then you find the gravitational constant has to be order 1 over n, otherwise you will collapse. For a star, this is the correct model. But if you want to deal with star, the process also has to be changed. So now we take this mean field problem, and now you ask yourself that, now you put this coupling constant 1 over n, and then just to make sure the potential energy and the kinetic energy, they are the same order. So the question is, what can you say about the dynamics? And then the dynamics, you assume, suppose your initial data is a product function, so you take a product initial data, and now you assume that at time t, the product initial data will stay product. So then you ask yourself, now at the point x, now what's the interaction you feel? So because of law of large numbers, then the average inference on this point x, you are given by its expectation, which is v of x minus y times u squared. I mean, just be careful, it's become u squared. It's not u. Because in the classical case, if you think about it as a probability density, then this has to be u, it's not u squared. But on the other hand, we are dealing with quantum mechanics wave function, and it's really L2 norm, which is conserved, so it will become a u squared. Okay, so now, if this is correct, then you can solve your, then you expect that this become a product, and this u of t will satisfy these nonlinear equations, and the interaction term just become v, this v convolution u t squared times u t. And this equation is so-called Hartree equation. And the Hartree equation is really used in applications. And then the special case, this v is a delta function. This now is pretty fancy. It's called Gross-Peter-Lisky equation. And this has something to do with Bose-Einstein condensation. I mean, if I have time at the end, I'd probably say a few words about it. Now, the first time I look at this problem, I try to check this, and then I take the case, there are only two particles, and then I take the product functions, and I differentiate. When I differentiate, now it's easy, if you take a product function, you differentiate, you get you take derivative in x, the derivative in y, and this u, this product function, this is nice. On the other hand, I will have trouble because now the two-body interaction is vx minus y utx times uty. And then I don't really see that, I don't really see a function which is a product will solve this equation in any sense. And also, what troubles me more is, now where is this, this square, this 2 comes from. And and then the reason is because actually we didn't look at the right quantity. The correct object to look at is the so-called one-particle density matrix. This means in classical probability, if you can define the margin of a distribution just by integrate out everybody else. And in quantum mechanics, you can also integrate out everybody else. On the other hand, you have to look at the wave function psi times psi bar, and the variable you have to put in has to be different, x and x prime. And then this becomes an operator. And this operator, if you integrate everybody else, it just has one left. This is called one-point density matrix. And the reason you want to put x and x prime is because you want to keep the phase. Because I erased it. Because in quantum mechanics, there's a phase. If you put the x and x prime are the same, then you are going to kill the phase. And so it's very important you keep the phase. And then the theorem we prove with Erdős, it says that now this one-particle density matrix actually will converge to a projection operator of this ut for all t if this ut solves this nonlinear Hauchy equation. And this theorem was proving the case, this v is 1 over x is Coulomb. And then in the old days, in the, this result by Hepp and Chabon, and which was, I think it must be, it's more than 20 years ago. So they proved the case v is bounded. So what we did is basically control the singularity of this problem. Okay, so okay, so no, because I didn't write down the full statement of the theorem. The full statement says that, thank you. The full statement says that it's RT, if you compute the J of x1, x2 to xj, and x1 prime to xj prime, will equal to gamma 1 T x1 y1, well, XL YL product over L. This will converge to this. So the statement has two parts. One part is the behavior of this one. The other one is you actually also get a product behavior. I mean, now it's now when one try to give a proof of this kind of result, and actually you find that, I mean, what's the difficult in all these problems? And then, I mean, here a question I have been thinking for many, many years, and I don't know what to do. And I mean, so a very simple question. Suppose you take a function of n variables. Forget about any quantum mechanics, whatever. Just completely forget about anything. And you take another function of n variables. You even know that they are product functions. So there's nothing sophisticated, there's no correlation and whatever. Now, you know that L2 norm is equal to 1 if you assume L2 norm psi equal to 1, L2 norm F equal to 1, L2 norm G equal to 1. And then you compute the L2 norm difference between two product functions. So the L2 norm difference, whenever you expand this, of course you get psi squared, psi prime squared is 2, and then you get the inner product. But the inner product is going to be F inner product with G to the power n. And as n goes to infinity, this always goes to 2. So essentially, the distance between any two functions are always equal to 2, no matter what you do, unless you can find out this g and this f. I mean, unless you, they are so close, even if raised to n power, you still cancel this one. I mean, otherwise, it's always 2. So this means that if you use L2 norm, and compare the difference of the two functions, then typically you're not going anywhere. So there's no way I can measure the distance between two objects. That's a real trouble. And now if you say, well, the same problem happened in probability of n particles, that's also basically correct. But in probability, you have a different concept like entropy and so on, but I mean relative entropy. But here, I don't have anything. So it's always, this always goes to 2. And then you cannot use any LT norm because it will blow up. Either it goes exponentially to infinity or exponential to 0. And another trouble is I also don't have a stability. So if you take any potential V and V prime, now, even if you say their difference are small, you take a derivative of the L2 norm, then you find that it's psi minus psi prime, and then you will see the V minus V prime times psi. So the difference is proportional to, this is, there are n squared term here times n, so it's n times epsilon. So the trouble is I don't have a stability of the problem. And then, this means that any of these methods will be very difficult to proceed. The other thing is that, now, I also ask myself the following questions, and maybe, if you have some idea, maybe you can tell me what to do. What is empirical measure? Because classically in probability theory, the reason all these mean field models become easy is because there's a concept of empirical measure. But now what it is in quantum mechanics, I don't know.
Of course, you can try to define it, but then it's too complicated. The reason is because in quantum mechanics, the position operator and this momentum operator, they are not commute. Due to this uncertainty principle, they are not commute. So if they are not commuting object, if you want to characterize their behavior, you have to take this, whatever we just saw in the last talk, take all this product of all of them, and that's not going to be possible. If you write down that, there's no way to do analysis in this case. And so I don't really know is there a good concept of empirical measure. So what you do is you go back to the method. Actually, is go back to this very ancient method. It's called BBGKY. It's called BBGKY hierarchy. It's a hierarchy. It related the behavior of a two party. So you take a one particle density matrix. You take differentiation. Then you are going to see the two particle density matrix will come in here. Because here you're going to see a two-particle density matrix. You have pair interaction, so you differentiate 1, you get the 2, you differentiate k, you're going to see the k plus 1. And then this is a hierarchy of equations. And then the question is, can you do analysis on this hierarchy of equations? And then, let me see. I have 10 minutes? A bit more? Okay. So this hierarchy of equations, and you write in the, I think this is very, very good, I think it's a nice observation of Chipong. He says this BBGK hierarchy will converge for a short time in trace norm if this V, if the potential V is bounded. This is a very nice observation. So this means that when the case V is bounded, you can just iterate and solve the problem. And then this is a standard issue of a k-n factorial. Remember, because this bk, because there are k particles to choose from, the gamma k has the k particle, so you have a choice of k particles, so there's a k here. So whenever you iterate an object has the summation j from 1 to k, you're going to get n k factorial. But on the other hand, this k factorial, it's going to be compensated because when you iterate in time, there's 1 over k factorial, and so they cancel out. And now, the case of controlling the singularities, you actually have to define a new Sobrev norm. And once you define a new Sobrev norm, because usually Sobrev norm, you just take this, you take the summation of this and to a higher power, so that's not going to work. You define a new Sobrev norm, and then you show that this hierarchy will converge in the H1 space under this new definition. On the other hand, you also have to show that your dynamics will be in this class, so you need some a priori estimate. And this part, actually this part is fairly difficult because now, if you have a Schrodinger evolution, now how do you obtain estimate? So this is the question. Now, take a Schrodinger equation, and now how do you get estimates? Especially for n-particle Schrodinger equation, how do you get any smoothness estimate? And I think this is the only way I know is, this is also the way we find out, is if you take energy to a high power, and then this is going to get sufficient energy estimate to solve this problem. And the main open problem here is the circle dynamics of bosonic star. And what you have to do is you change the Laplace operator to a relativistic one. And now, this is a boson case. I forgot to say when I say something is a boson, this means the wave function size is completely symmetric. And then you ask yourself, what happened to a case they are anti-symmetric? So, there are two more cases one can consider. One is the fermion case, which means they are anti-symmetric. The other case, which are very interested is this so-called Bose-Einstein condensation. And this means for the Bose-Einstein condensation case, let me see. The equation is here. The Bose-Einstein condensation case, this is a mean field interaction. But if you want to derive the Bose-Einstein, there's a misconception that because the so-called equation for Bose-Einstein condensation
is this function v is a delta function, so let's v here. So you get this Hartree equation. If you take this delta function, then this is called the Gross-Pilavis equation, and people believe this equation will describe the Bose-Einstein condensation. And so then you will say, well, I'll just take this to become a delta function, but this is not completely correct. Actually, Bose-Einstein condensation does not have a mean field scaling, so that's what's complicated the story. So the interesting question one is this bosonic star, the other one is Bose-Einstein condensation. And now next thing I want to say is about the fermions, and which we only made very limited progress. And I feel that the analysis we can do here is very, very limited. So you can see the fermion case. So now I put back, so here's evolution of n particles, still with mean field interaction, but then I put back the Planck constant. Now, the reason I want to put back the Planck constant is because if I don't do that, I have no way to make sense of these dynamics. Because if you want to see the evolution given by this term, this is kinetic energy, and this is potential energy. If you want to see they have evolution, their energy or their will has to be about the same. It's a typical situation. So if you look at the energy of n fermions in a box, so for example, if you put you take a box and you put n fermions, and then you ask what's the energy, then you'll find that the energy of n fermion will go like n to the 5 third. So this means that if you put n particles in a box of size 1, then the typical energy of a particle is not n, it's n to the 2 third. So typical energy is n to the 2 third. On the other hand, you can try to use this epsilon squared, this Planck constant, to make this order 1. In order to do that, you can choose this epsilon n to the minus 1 third. Okay. So this is the energy per particle. So in order to have energy per particle to be order 1, you have to choose the Planck constant to be n to the minus 1 third. And this is the scaling of the of the fermion. So then, again, this was actually this problem was considered. So then you take a Wigner distribution of the problem, and then the Nonhofer and the Schwell, I think they first find out this in it's also in the late 70s and the beginning of the 80s. So if you take epsilon to the n to the minus 1 third, and then if you take initial data, because you take n particles, which has to be anti-symmetric, the only possible state to be anti-symmetric, the simplest one is the product, is a determinant. So if you like a determinant process, here's a determinant. So if you take n particle initial data to be a determinant, and you ask evolution under the Schrodinger equation, how this determinant evolved. And of course, the trouble is this, it will get out of this class of determinant. But it doesn't matter. But Nonhofer Schwell says the Wigner transform will converge to the velocity equation as angle infinity. And then the Wigner transform is going to solve this classical velocity equation. And also, furthermore, which I didn't write it here, is actually if you compute a Wigner distribution over two particles, it's going to become a product. So I want to say, so if you take Wigner distribution of two particles, W, x1, x2, v1, v2. This is going to converge to W, x1, v1 times W, x2, v2. In other words, the determinant feature disappear in the angle to infinity limit for the anti-symmetric functions. I mean, if you can calculate, you just use this e to the I k of x, use this sine cosine, and then you make your choice, and j, and then I, and take a determinant, and you calculate the two-point function, you will find that actually it becomes a product in the limit as angle to infinity. So this was the work by Nonhofer and Schwell. So they basically established this scaling was correct. And what Schwell did was he improved the assumption of the V. Because in the beginning, the V has to be analytic. Okay, so
So now, now you can ask question like, what about a Coulomb and so on. And then there's another question, what about the Hartree or Hartree-Fock equation? Because it seems the Hartree or Hartree-Fock equation just become completely meaningless for this, for the fermion. And for the fermion, you can completely think about it in terms of classical dynamics. This actually was not correct because, let me see, I don't think I, what we show is the following. So if you take, if you solve the Hartree equation, you keep a Planck constant, okay? And then you solve this equation and you take its Wigner distribution of the solution of this Schrodinger equation with the Planck constant epsilon equal to n to the minus 1/3. And then if you assume the initial data is a Slater determinant, okay. So I mean this exchange term, this is something a little bit technical, so don't worry about it. Now what we find out, this is joint work with Elgar, Erlich, and Schlein and myself, is for the analytic functions, and then we will have the Wigner distribution, the evolution Wigner distribution compared with the solution of this one, actually is of order 1 over n. So what he says is, if you, the so-called, if you put, solve the nonlinear, Hartree equation, then it's going to be much better compared with classical Vyasov equation. How good it is? It's good up to error 1 over n. And then the reason I say I didn't really like this so much is because the assumption is too strong. We assume V is analytic. And the reason is because, as I say, I don't really have a very good way to control the n-particle quantum dynamics. And especially the case now, especially because now one's converged to this Vyasov equation. And the Vyasov equation, if you look at literature, even the behavior solution of this equation is fairly difficult. The reason is because you don't have a Laplace operator anywhere. So that's, I mean, once you don't have a Laplace operator in your problem, then typically this has a big troubles. So that's why we can only do this for analytic case. And now I will just make a conclusion. Conclusion are following. Now, except this, in the beginning I mentioned this Schrodinger equation converged to the heat equations, and then for the quantum n-particle problems, here are the troubles. The trouble is, in the beginning I don't have a natural norm. So I cannot really compare things. And the only way I can do is through this hierarchy. But if I go through the hierarchy, then there's a question of if you have an effective way to study a system of infinite coupled equations, and which I don't think at this moment we have such a method. I mean, all the methods are too elementary in my opinion. And then, this is the same. And then, so also it's quite important if you think about the problem, the boson and fermion, they are actually, even the scaling are completely different. And also, physically we also know that the Hartree equation can also used to be to model fermions if you interpret correctly. And the last one is this very interesting case of boson and condensation case, and this is for short range potential and it's different scaling. It converges to equation is formally just that you take a Hartree equation and take the V to be a delta function. So I think I'll stop here. So thank you very much.